Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Matic. I'm joined by my buddy on Friday, as always, Rich Rebar from sharpfootballanalysis.com. On this Friday show, we pick our five favorite games against the spread, like the Super Contest or, you know, all the other great NFL picks contests out there. Been having a good year so far. Don't think either of us felt crazy about the slate last week. I also don't feel crazy about the slate this week. I think there are some really interesting spots, like what happens to this Tampa Bay Las Vegas Raiders game? Are they going to wait until the Raiders offensive line gets healthy? Like, you know, it's just one of those very weird spots. And then I think after watching the Red Rifle play on Monday night, I've been cured of having to bet on the Cowboys for the rest of the year. So like that feels pretty good, I think.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We've been really hot the last 3 weeks. I've been waiting for it to fall off, you know, us to kind of run off, because we've been like absolutely insane and it's not supposed to be like this. So maybe this is the week, but
yeah, we got some 2 and 3 weeks coming is what we're saying.
Well, I mean, hey, you never know. But this is a week where we talk about, just a little bit of a show, we talk about this in general, how we feel about the slate. And there are a couple games I like, but there are not like five games I really like. So I think the way we're going to fill our card if we're in a super contest is we'll get into it. But I'm just going to go to some tried and true teams, I think, at the bottom here, and then talk about some of the games I like the most. Because there are some of these games that, like this New England-San Francisco game we kind of hit on, like I have no idea what to do with that at all, like on any level. Don't really have a feel for what I do with that. I mean, I've been like really wanting to bet against the Jaguars every week. I talked about it last week on the show, but, yeah. I don't know if I have it fundamentally in me to lay 8 with an Anthony Lynn team. It's going to be hard for me to get past. I don't know if that one's on your card.
That was one I looked at. So that was definitely one that I looked at. The problem is that like I mean, one, you don't want to bet on Anthony Lynn team. And then two, like, Minshew can have these games, right? Like, he's – I would say Minshew's basically terrible 70% of the time he drops back to throw. But then he does, because he's got that – he's, like, hyper-accurate. Minshew's problem is not accuracy. It's all decision-making. So if the decision-making – like, if he just runs pure on decision-making for a game, like, he can actually carve you up. It's very – because generally speaking, that's, like – not something you see with undrafted free agent quarterbacks. Like their problem is going to be decision making and accuracy, and they're going to be like strong, like cannon arm types, and that's like the exact opposite of what Minshew is.
Yeah, and then you know you're talking about laying over a touchdown with the style the Chargers play with. It just like feels like such a backdoor spot too. Like it's just like, all right, well they're just they don't even throw in the third and fourth quarters. Yeah. Like you know they're up, you know, something like 17, and then you get like a 10-point fourth quarter. It doesn't matter, and Anthony Lynn doesn't care.
He's definitely not like, out there working for the cover. He feels he's got his job security. So what is your number five game?
So my number five is going to be the Packers. So like I said, there's three games I feel pretty good about. And then there's two I'm just going to go to teams I kind of believe in. I believe in the teams and I believe in the spot they're in. So I got lucky last week with the Titans -3.5. That should not have happened. That just shows you how hot we've run. That one definitely should not have hit. Yes. We got the touchdown. Well, we had the first got the failed two-point conversion, which Deshaun Watson, you know, Cobb wasn't his first read, but if he just resets and flips that ball, I mean, it's an easy, you know, Texans win. He's wide open. They go down the field. They tie the game with 4 seconds left. They win the toss, and Deshaun Watson, you can see it in his face when they lost the toss. They're like, well, we're not stopping these guys. I'm not getting the football. And, you know, it happened. They went right down the field and give up a touchdown. But I think with the way that Matt LaFleur and the Packers want to play, this is just a terrible spot for the Texans. You know, this is a game where the Packers are just going to be able to run the ball all over, run their short, efficient passing game that they did the first 4 weeks. I mean, Houston is one of the worst teams in the NFL in pressure rate. So, you know, Aaron Rodgers, what happened last week was all, you know, just pressure induced. David Bakhtiari went out. He might not play, but the Texans, I don't think you can take advantage of that. So when you look at the Texans, they're just getting crushed with explosive runs. And it wasn't just last week against Derrick Henry. It's been a regular occurrence to them the entire season. It's part of the reason why people were drawn to Derrick Henry in DFS in the first place. They've allowed already four different individual backs to have 138 yards from scrimmage or more. So it looks like a big Aaron Jones game. Looks like a game where the Packers aren't going to be, you know, forced to be pressured. They're going to be able to run the football, stay on script. I like Houston side as well to score points, and you know, maybe this is a backdoor spot. But when I'm picking these last two games, I'm going to pick, like I said, two teams I just kind of believe in a little bit more than the other teams, or a lot more than the other teams. And I still do believe the Packers are just an objectively better team than the Texans.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. This was going to be my number four, actually. But a lot of it just comes down to thinking that, you know, they're not very good. Like, the Texans are just not very good. Like, they don't have a good defense. They don't really have a good pass rush. Deshaun Watson is very good, but they don't have a good offensive line for him. I think the Packers – I mean, I don't think the Packers' defense is great either, but I think it's better than the Texans' defense is. I think they are probably better coached at this point because – you know, Romeo Crennel is out there calling the shots. And, you know, we've seen how Romeo Crennel decision-making goes at the highest level. Like, it's not a particularly great spot. So yeah, I'm with you on that one for sure. And you, in like everyone listening to this, you know how much it pains me to bet on Aaron Rodgers. I don't like Aaron Rodgers. I don't think that he is. And that's going to be such an annoying thing this week, is we're going to get the, you guys all said Rodgers sucked last week. And then, you know, he's going to go, 26 for 34, 280 yards and two touchdowns this week. And he's going to have at least one really great throw to, you know, MBS or Darius Shepherd or someone. And the haters are going to be, you know, the haters are going to be sick. So definitely everyone look forward to that one happening this week. All right. This is one that I really vacillated on this one for a while. But my number five is Pittsburgh plus one at Tennessee. I think that the Steelers are better on both sides. I think their offense is better. I think their defense is better. Never thought I would say this. I actually think that the Titans are better coached, though. I think Vrabel is a better head coach, and I think Arthur Smith is a better offensive coordinator. But the Steelers just have so many players who are so good. Like, they just have so many guys who are above average at their position. And, you know, Steelers, Titans, that basically a pick 'em. I want the Steelers here.
So this is my number one.
Yeah.
This is my one. And you and I have a history of fading the Titans and it coming back to just completely blow in our face. They're like our like kryptonite. So that's another reason why I was like, man, do I put this at one? But this is like a spot-wise. It looks like, I mean, I like the Steelers to win this game outright anyways. I mean, and you talk about what the Titans do, are plays right into the hands of what the Steelers do well defensively. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, if you look at, so against the blitz, Ryan Tannehill is averaging 6.4 yards per pass attempt. He's completed 62% of his passes. Not against the blitz, he's at 8.5 yards per pass attempt, 73% completion rate. He is 28th in the NFL in yards per pass attempt under pressure. Steelers blitz at the highest rate in the NFL. They get the most pressure in the league. Taylor Lewan out for the season in this game. The Tennessee Titans run the football on first down at the third highest rate in the NFL. The Steelers are second in the NFL in yards per carry allowed on first down rushing attempts at 2.8 yards. So if the Titans are going to come out and run for 2 yards on first down or 3 yards, and they're staying at second and seven, or they're getting these third and sixes, and these blitzes are coming, and you're not able to play action pass, which is, you know, just a huge generator of what the Titans
do. I mean, like what has made Tannehill who he is the Derrick Henry play action passes.
Well, if you look at Dan Pizzuta at our site, has written about this, just how Ryan Tannehill has jumped career-wise and in context of the NFL the past years, on passes 10 to 19 yards downfield. They call them the intermediate routes, the mid-range jumper of the NFL. And it's because that play action is pulling those linebackers, and that's the level of the field. A lot of people think, well, play action's only to set up deep shots, but no, you're sucking in the linebackers, and then A.J. Brown's running a dig route, or someone's right behind those linebackers, or Jonnu Smith, and you're getting those hitters. And that's so much of their offense. So if the Steelers are going to come out and stop the Derrick Henry on first and second down and put this Tennessee offense behind the eight ball and down in distances where they're going to be able to blitz and racket up pressure, and Ryan Daniels not handled either well so far this season, and you take away Taylor Lewan from the effect, I just think it's going to be a game where the Steelers defense, you know, can really get after it. And on the other side of the ball, you know, Ben has basically just been a caretaker this year. Just they've really gone out and just told Ben not to lose games.
Yeah, don't mess up, bro. Yeah,
he's not throwing the ball downfield. He's 28th in the NFL in depth of target, 7.2 yards, way down from his career norm, and coming off the elbow, we should probably expect something like that. But he's not turning the ball over. He's got a super high touchdown rate, so he's been efficient. The Titans defense, I still think it's the question mark. Like, can they get enough stops? And I just think that the Steelers get enough stops here to win outright, to win this game. And I like that side the most. So we have universally both, like I said, warn the listeners.
If you gotten owned so hard on the Titans so many times.
If you're coming on this and catching us this year, just understand last year we were totally against the Tennessee Titans run pure team, and they started off running pure again.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and to some extent, the Titans are built to be a team that runs pure because of the way they play, right? Like, it's, they have all these outlier runs from Derrick Henry. That's their thing, and Derrick Henry will have a good amount of those, over the course of his career or whatever. And then, the play action passing, because it's all about, being able to pick up huge chunk yardage when you do complete passes. And I'm off of it. I'm not doing it this week. We're betting. I mean, this was actually, if you want to go back, this was, what was it, week 3 or 4 when this game was scheduled, and everyone and their mom was betting the Steelers getting a point here, up or 2 points, when the line came out on Sunday morning, and then the game got postponed and pushed. And, everyone was excited to bet that line. And we've seen, it's not like the Steelers have been bad over that time frame. It's just that the Titans beat the Bills and they beat the Texans. And then, but here's the thing about people is they're so stupid, because if the Titans lose that game in overtime to the Texans last week, like, let's say the Texans win that coin toss and Will Fuller gets past the defensive back and scores a touchdown on the first play of overtime, and it's done, and the Texans win, it's Steelers by 2.5 here. Like, it's just like, that's just the way the brain works. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that's why I'm maybe it just gets removed. That's why that Buccaneers game too. It's like that one, like, feels like a little bit of a trap spot as well, because everyone just saw them kind of just boat race the Packers and what was essentially a primetime game, that, because there's only 2 4 o'clock games last week, and they just crushed them, and everyone forgets they lost to the Bears the week before, and this Raiders team is coming off of a bye and has played pretty well, and it looks like just they're going to remove this from the board from us. So hopefully if none of their offensive linemen can play.
I'm very interested to see. I'm very interested to see what happens there. This one is on mine for sure. That Tampa Bay game. So we can talk about that one in a second, but what is your, I guess this would be your number 4 game now.
Yeah, I'm basically kind of just – I'm very hesitant that game gets played at all. So, like, I just haven't really, like, put a lot into it. My number 4 is going to be, like I said, I want to – there's 3 games I felt good about. Pittsburgh was one. So, tried and true, like, what do we do here? When we go? We go to the teams that have been good for us, right? Teams that we feel like are – don't even necessarily have to run pure. So, I'm going to have the Chiefs here at 4. I wish the line was a little bit better. I wish we were getting, like – I wish it was, like, 7.5, 7 in that area. But if you're asking me if I believe the Chiefs win by double digits here, I do, because I'm basically essentially trying to convince myself, can the Broncos get to 17 points in this game? And I don't know if they can. I don't know if they can with Drew Lock against this Chiefs defense. Last year, the Chiefs in the 2 games they played the Broncos, they won by 20 plus. In both games, in neither game, the Broncos could move the ball at all. And in the one area where the Chiefs defense is bad or doesn't really care is you running the football. And the Broncos have just been so bad running the football this year. And they did run better last week against the Patriots team on the road, but they have just been so poor and so inefficient.
Well, they finally played their good running back instead of their bad one.
Well, the bad one they'll probably play again this week a little bit, I would assume. Yeah. But, I mean, it's just Drew Lock, man. I don't think he can just get enough points here. And then you're seeing teams the way they want to come play the Chiefs this year. Only the Ravens have come out and blitzed the Chiefs, and that did not go well for the Ravens. But even you go back to last week, the Bills were 3rd in the NFL in blitz rate coming into that game on Monday, and they just said, nope, they blitzed one time. They just dropped back, and they said, you could just run for 6 yards for the whole game, and we'll have a shot at the end, hopefully. And they did. But that was with, Josh Allen. I don't think Drew Lock's going to have them in a spot here. So, I mean, I don't feel like the most so amazing about it. When I'm filling out my card here, I'm going to go to a team that I believe in is just head and shoulders way above the other team, and somehow the Chiefs get it done.
So I didn't put the Chiefs on my card this week for the first time all year. Has nothing to – and literally my reasoning is I think they're going to try and establish it too hard with Bell and CEH. Like, I think it's going to be one of those things where they're like, they want this, you know, quote-unquote superstar they signed to feel – because, by the way, Reed did this with LeSean McCoy. If you want to go back and look at when Shady first got with the team last year, they were giving him the ball a ton early before it became obvious that he couldn't play. So, like, I'm worried that they literally try and run the ball like 50 times in this game, in which case it's a lot harder to cover 9.5 as opposed to 6 when you are not getting a touchdown on a lot of your drives in the second half. Because what happens when you run the ball is you kick a lot of field goals and running the ball really go well together. It's just like the ultimate giving up. I've been having this very visceral reaction to like teams running on like 2nd and 8 watching games recently, like on Red Zone or just watching these primetime games. And I've been so pissed off watching these teams run on 2nd and 8. Just like it was Jamichael Hasty the other day, like the 49, I know, and the 49ers won the game and it didn't matter, but like they were trying to get Jamichael Hasty all these carries. And I was just like, you got George Kittle, you got Debo, like, just like, can we gain some yards? Can we score some points? Like, it really frustrates me watching these games to watch these teams just give up and be like, whatever, we'll take 3 yards on this play. So that's my rant there. I like it obviously, but that one is not my, that one
I totally get why it wouldn't be on someone's card. Yeah, man. If you like rushing on 1st and 2nd down, man, watch some Anthony Lynn.
Yeah. Okay. So my next one is, I already did Green Bay, already did Pittsburgh. My next one is Tampa Bay. If the game gets played, I feel pretty good about it because either the Raiders are not going to have all of their offensive line or some of their offensive line. Although I, just as you and I were getting on, like literally 20 minutes ago, there was just a report that no Raiders had a positive test today, that all the tests from yesterday came back negative. So that's probably good in the sense of getting the game to play. Does it play on Sunday at this point? I don't know, because I think that they sent all the offensive line and offensive line coaches home. They're like, so all the offensive line has to quarantine for 5 days. So we'll see. You know, we're really living in a brand new world here in terms of fantasy football and betting on games. But even with the trap spot, I think the thing about the Brady version of the Buccaneers is you feel very good about them with a 10-point lead. Like if they get a 10-point lead, I really don't feel like they're not going to cover. The issue with the Brady Buccaneers is, as we saw in the Saints game, it is just a nightmare if they get down by 10 points because they are pushing it. They're still running. Like, I probably the biggest issue is that they're still running on like 2nd and long and 1st down, down 10 points. They're not really changing their offense. And the short to intermediate throws that just would be a guaranteed like 7 yards when Brady was 37. It's like, maybe it's because Evans isn't healthy. Maybe it's because Godwin has been in and out. Maybe it's because Scotty Miller is terrible and is not good at clearing out that space. But it just feels like those throws are not automatic anymore. But I also want to be short on the Raiders. I know they just beat the Chiefs, but like I have a very strong opinion that the Raiders are like a paper tiger team. I think the defense is terrible. I guess the one thing, this is so weird to think about betting on games like this, but was there like a chance that Henry Ruggs was maybe a brilliant draft pick and that Ruggs actually changes the entire context of how you have to defend Derek Carr and the Raiders because he is so fast and Henry Ruggs is the most impactful 9-route runner in the NFL. That's my take, I think.
What's funny is he's actually, I thought the strength of Ruggs from my non-scouting eye was that he actually didn't even have to be like a 9-route
after the catch. Yeah.
Well, he was so good, like in motion, like on like slants and digs and stuff like that. Because he actually wasn't even the Alabama deep guy, you know, him or Judy.
Yeah, it was Devonta Smith. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was the biggest pro. I thought that's people thought he was like basically John Ross, and I was like, no, like this dude is like like really good at like running these like you these routes that are like 8 to 14 yards downfield too as well, and you get him with the ball in motion, and it's like a wrap. Like it's just he's a killer. But I mean, Derek Carr's been playing really good this year.
Like, he's been so good. Yeah.
It's like kind of flying under the radar a little bit, like how good he's been. Like Nelson Aguilar's balling out. Like it's so like that's a testament to how good Derek
Carr's been. Three touchdowns on like 11 targets.
He's got one incomplete target at his opportunities. We had like a span where Hunter Renfrow looked good for like 2 weeks while he was getting like lead work. Right. They're just another team though that like consistently doesn't get it. Like they're that team that you talked about. Like they're running Josh Jacobs like so much to where it's like a detriment to the like their offense.
Yeah.
Like
and spoiler alert, even if they're playing with five backup offensive linemen, they're gonna do the same thing. They're not gonna abandon the run just because the offensive line is not healthy.
So you're right. I think you're right on this this one. I think I probably should have had it on there. Probably should have been close. I was just so uncertain about like I've been so pessimistic all week of even happening, and I've just been kind of like turned off.
Yeah,
on
I mean,
it, I guess in a
like
sense.
If like, you like obviously you can't bench Ronald Jones because no one has good running backs, but even like Mike Evans, I would be looking for alternatives. I think. And like, you know,
we'll know Sunday morning for sure. Like what's going on. Yeah,
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean that Bucks passing game, though, man, from a fantasy stance, like neither of those guys are going to get there. I don't think for you this year.
I think Godwin will. I think that Godwin's season has been so stop and go, but I think that the decline of Mike Evans is going to like the souped up Julian Edelman role that people were touting all offseason. Like I actually still think that happens for Godwin. Like I think he has like a couple, like, do you remember when Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler played together? Like, yeah. I think we're going to see a couple games like that from Godwin and Brady, where it's just like literally every third down, it's just like a 7 yard slant to Chris Godwin. At least I have to keep telling myself that, because I have Godwin in all of these leagues, dude. Like just one of my biggest positions. So we need it.
I hope so, man. You and I have Mike Evans on the main event team.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty much writing that one off. I would, if I had Mike Evans in leagues where I could trade right now, I would trade him for Travis Fulgham. That's not even sarcasm, dude.
I think you're 3 weeks late on trading Mike Evans.
No, because the leagues that have trading still have casual bros who are like, it's Mike Evans, he's a GOAT, you know?
Yeah, I think the optimal time was definitely like a couple weeks ago, and he was coming off that huge second game.
After he had his fourth straight 1 yard touchdown.
No, the Chargers week when he popped again. Then the next week he had the fourth straight 1 yard yard touchdown.
Yeah. All right, what's your next one here?
I have got the Browns here.
This was my number one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think with the Browns, it's pretty clear cut like when we're going to want to target them and we're going to want to fade them. Like it was the last 3 weeks. We were on them against the Colts. We were off them last week when we were on the Steelers side, and I think this is another week to get back on. When you just look at offensively what they want to do, it's just a mismatch to what the Bengals are, one, not good at stopping. You just look at the run game. The Browns are averaging the highest differential in run plays versus their opponent. The Bengals outside are only the Texans have allowed more yards on explosive runs than the Bengals. They lose DJ Reader for the season. Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins have voiced their concerns about their roles and have kind of hinted that they want to be traded at some point this season. They lost Sam Hubbard on the defensive line as well. I mean, the Browns are going to come out and run their offense, and then the Browns offensive line or defensive line is just a mismatch for this, you know, Bengals offensive line that just can't protect Joe Burrow. They did backdoor when these teams played in week two, that Burrow got the backdoor as the 5.5, and they won. The Browns won by 5.
I know that was one of the games I really liked as like a look ahead line, and everyone on gambling Twitter was on the Browns side. And I was just like, well, first off, I was definitely wrong, because the Browns absolutely just crushed the Bengals in that game, just up and down. It was brutal, but people didn't know about Joey backdoors yet. Joe Burrow is going to be, until the Bengals get good around him, he is going to be like an all-time backdoor cover guy, because he's really good. Like, I people want to talk about how great Herbert has been, and we're going to get Tua in 2 weeks, but like, Burrow has been fantastic to me. Like, he has been, I think, even better than probably the Bengals anticipated as a rookie.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to be discouraged of anything we've seen from Burrow, and it's been positive so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as it just comes down to like, this is a spot, I think, where you look at the Browns and the way they want to function offensively, they're going to run into no resistance. And then their defensive line is definitely good enough to get enough heat on Burrow and, you know, definitely get turnovers. And I don't think we'll see the 60 passing attempts Burrow had in week two, when these teams play again this week. So I definitely got the Browns here. I just think, like I said, it's one of these spots. I think the Browns are pretty clear when we're going to want to be on and off them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they're just going to be able to run downhill the entire game. And yeah, I don't really have anything super intelligent to say about this game. It's just the Bengals defense, not very good. I actually think the Browns offense is, like, I don't know, the 9th or 10th best in the NFL, which is, like, you know, that it's very illuminating to think about, like, how many bad offenses there are in the NFL if the Browns are making that list. But yeah, I mean,
Browns are, we've seen their two huge losses and they've gotten waxed, and it's just about getting them off script, you know, getting them off what they want to do. And it's just over.
Yeah. All right. What is your next game?
So my last one is Seattle. And it's really just a spot where that has just done me so well that I'm just going to keep going back to it. And then added with some trends that are going on this year. So, I mean, we got Russ, and Russ is, like, arguably the best primetime quarterback we've had since he was drafted. We know about the home record, but also on the road, he's 10-4-1 against the spread in primetime on the road. He's 4-1-1 against the spread as a road favorite. We talked about the spot of bye teams being road favorites coming off of a bye last week at the Lions and how just advantageous that's been. 70% hit since 2003. We've got that for Seattle. And then also teams off of Monday night this year have been horrible. Teams coming off of Monday that are 3-8 so far, 2-8-1 against the spread, that play on Sunday the following week. It's been a nightmare for those teams. Just believe Seattle's a little bit better. So I think Arizona is in that bucket of, they're above Cleveland, but I feel like Arizona is one of these teams, like, we know when to be on and off them. And yeah, this feels like a spot not to be on them until they show, like, when they play the Jets and the Cowboys, the world. Like, it's, I think it's okay to, like, to look and say, like, yeah, that's when it's cool to be on them. And this is a week I feel like it's definitely, they're still probably punching up.
Yeah, yeah. You play them when they are playing bad teams. I think that is, you know, pretty obvious. And I think that this line seems weird to me because it's giving Kyler and Cliff more credit than they've gotten. Like, they were what, 1-point favorites against Dallas last week without Dak? Like,
right.
I was thinking this would be Seattle 4.5 or 5. Like, it feels like a weird line to me, and I would not surprise me to see this one move again before kickoff, I think. So, you know, just one of those things that is, it just felt weird to me. This was obviously on my list as well. I mean, come on, Russ against a defense where, like, both of these teams, I think, actually want to play fast in the sense of, like, Seattle actually, I think, is, like, 23rd in total situation or total pace. But when games are within 6 points, they are the 6th fastest offense. And then Arizona, obviously, is, like, I think, the 3rd fastest situation neutral offense thus far. So, like, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for points to be scored here, which I won't actually tout the over here because it's, like, the squarest bet of all time. But if I was going to bet something here on the total, it would be the over.
And it's, like, both these teams are kind of due for some regression and how efficient they've been at scoring touchdowns. But, like, we've done this with Seattle for, like, a decade now where it's just, like the regression isn't real regression.
Right. Yeah. It's like, great. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll believe that Seattle regresses, like, when Russ retires. Like, It's literally not even worth fighting, I feel like. Like, it's seriously just like, what's the point? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've done it early in our careers with Seattle. And just, like, you know, they keep luck boxing. And just eventually you just are numb to it. And you're just like, yes, Russell's going to make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, he is like, Russell is like if Tannehill did this for a decade. Like, that's really what it's like. Yeah. So,
well, that's
there
it,
we go.
We have four of the same 5 this week. So that probably bodes pretty bad for us.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, because it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to bet Carolina +7 against New Orleans? Like, what are you going to do with San Francisco, New England? What are you going to do with, like, Chicago? The Bears-Rams game is, like, the all-time, these coaches hate their quarterbacks game, which I actually, if I was going to bet that game, I would bet the Bears. But yeah, I mean, not actually just yeah, not just they've not a ton of games.
They've played twice the last 2 years, and they have played in prime time. So they're doing it again. These two teams, if you go back, the Bears and Rams last 2 years have played in prime time. And does anyone remember 2 years ago when they played? I don't know if you remember this. Him and Goff and Trubisky threw like 8 interceptions combined.
I have like very vague memories of that. Yeah,
dude, it was like what it was. It might be the worst primetime game I've ever seen, in which is, you know, I mean, maybe it's just, you know, it's Hyper Bowl, but dude, I think Wentz threw 4 picks. I think Trubisky threw 3. They played twice in primetime last year's, and I think the scores have been, they've combined for 24 points and 21 points. And it's just like they played miserable games against each other. Last year they played and it was 17-7. It was just a ridiculously terrible game. How do they do it? And do it to us again? It's on primetime again this year. What the hell?
Because the Bears are a mass media. You know, they get Bears are gonna pull the rate, and they're 5-1, dude.
I know,
5-1, bro. How many wins? Yeah. How many wins do the Bears end with? Do they get to 8?
Yeah, probably, right? Their schedule's a joke.
Yeah, their schedule is a joke. It's just
so it I was feels... on the I was on the Bears over for win total this year.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel good about it. It was really just schedule based. I thought it was getting good vig. And it's like, dude, they should have like 2 wins right now.
I mean, it's brutal, man. They're brutal.
I mean, I was on them last week, and they hit, because it's just one of those spots. This week, I don't think it's a game I can touch. It's just a weird number, and I think the under is the play there. But those two teams have played twice in primetime last year, and if anyone remembers, they have been games you probably didn't watch all the way through. There's no way you could have. No person could have watched those games all the way through and cared.
Man, I watched that Giants Eagles game all the way through, and I wish.
But
I
Eagles
didn't.
Are. But the Eagles play fun, bad games to me. Like, I feel like every Eagles game was, like, fun in a bad way, and we talk about it just a little bit. It's like, Wentz is, like, the dude towing that line. Like, you never know if the play is going to be amazing or, like, horrendous. Like, he's on that, like, that tightrope this year. And, like, the games have turned to fun. Like, they go on these, like, fourth quarter blitzkriegs every week, and they end up getting there. They're terrible for 3 quarters every week. They get on a heater in the fourth quarter and just, like, kind of get you there in the end. I mean, yeah. Listen, they got us the Boston Scott touchdown. That's all I care about.
Dude, if they didn't get us that Boston Scott touchdown, I was going to be tilting. I was going to be tilting. Because a Carson Wentz 1-yard rushing touchdown, like, come on,
dude.
First
drive. On the first drive, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Give us the Boston Scott, bro. Like, come on. Any DFS takes? Anything that you want out there on the record?
Great slate this week. A great slate of game. It's going to be interesting to see what the correct stacks are and what game stacks there are. I haven't really dove into ownership yet and looking at what games I'm trying to pick and choose.
I don't think that any spot is going to be really that crazy.
You think just this? Yeah.
Because we have Seattle, Arizona. We have Houston, Green Bay, Carolina, New Orleans. Like, I think there's a lot of spots with really high totals. So, like, what you don't love to see is, like, the Dallas-Seattle week. Like, every player in that game except for Gallup was, like, 20% owned or more, right. And I don't think we'll see that this week.
When you have that, you got to almost pick a side. You know, do you just say, all right, I need it not to hit. You know, I'm going to go under. I just need it not to hit. I just have to cheer against it's not happening,
right?
And try to run that way. Or this week where it's just like you might just try to pick one side that you say just like, all right, it's spread out even, but I like this one spot a little more. Maybe it's Green Bay, Houston, or whatever, and you just say, all right, since it's spread out and people are spread out, that this is the one I go all in on. And since it's not like the week you said, I just believe that this is the nut spot. But definitely a lot of leverage points too you can get. Obviously, you know, Green Bay passing game's a leverage point this week. Detroit Atlanta has got a whole bunch of weird like things that could hit too. And like I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I like no great individual player takes. I think it's just a really good slate. I think there are a lot of really great individual matchup plays. It's going to make for one of these slates that offers a lot of diversity again. I think last week did too. The way I know, like Henry, the super chalk out there with Henry, but like the way the week set up last week and running back scoring was so bad is what also helped Henry. Not that it would have mattered him scoring 40 points, but like you look at last week, like if you played David Montgomery, even like he didn't even kill you. He was like the running back 12 last week and sucked. Like, it was awful.
And David Montgomery, bro.
The running back points, though, were so bad last week that it elevated Henry even further, though. Like, no one even got – like, he had so many more points than the field because the position was so bad. I think we won't have that this week. Even Mike Davis got there with a touchdown, but, like, he didn't get there in totality. It was just – the running back position was just awful last week outside of Henry. That's why he provided so much – leverage if you hit on him. I went under on Derrick Henry just because it was the same thing like week three against Jacksonville. It worked out that week, and it did not work out this week just because he's one of those guys. If he doesn't get in the box, you know, if you're under, you look great. And for three quarters it did, and then he gets that 94-yard touchdown and you're drawn dead.
I was talking the other day on the Swolecast, and I was like, you know what? This is actually the Derrick Henry spot where the types of people that are really likely to play Derrick Henry on DraftKings specifically are actually going to be off of him a little bit because it's a terrible matchup, right? But Henry is like the most matchup proof guy of all time because either he runs for a 50-yard plus touchdown or he doesn't. And I don't think that has anything to do with defensive strength. I think it's literally just either he could do it against the Steelers or he could do it against the Jaguars with like equal likelihood, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just those are variance plays. And then the flip side of that is, even if he's running for 2.5 yards a carry, it just means he's going to get 35 carries.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But, I mean, he definitely got me last week. I did run him in cash, though, which did save, like, me to at least, like, tread water last week. But it's an archetype I will continually, just my process typically is to come under in tournaments. And, listen, you can say that that's a shitty process. That's fine. I can wear that. But anytime like a Josh Jacobs type or anything is like the chalk, I'm not going to play that guy. I'm going to come under.
Yeah. Well, I already did my Henry thing. The people have already heard it.
Oh, yeah,
It was not a good time.
Are you on anything? Is there anything that I have to? Is there any like super lock that I need to not be blind on here?
Well, I mean, I think that we just talked about all these games with really high totals, but the Chiefs actually have – the second highest total of the week or the third, I guess it depends. Stuff as I don't know exactly what the totals are now, but they have either a 28 or a 29 point team total, depending on, you know, what your book is hanging out there. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, literally no one's going to roster this guy. Literally nobody. Like we're talking about like 4% maybe on him, 2% on Mahomes. Kelsey will get owned because he's always, you know, he is the best tight end, but I would say a huge chunk of the Chiefs, like Reek, D-Rob, Hardman. I mean, I have to play Hardman just because if Hardman has like a 19-point game and I don't have him in anything, it's like literally what's even the point? Like, why am I even here? And the interesting thing is on DraftKings, I actually want to do at least one Albert O team because – I think that he is going to be the Cortland Sutton in the red zone for the rest of the season. I really do. Cause I know that's Drew Locke's boy and the coaching staff already said today, Fant has been practicing in full all week, but the coaching staff said today, like Albert O is going to be a part of the offense moving forward. So like, I think he's going to replace all those Nick Vinette and Jake Butt snaps moving forward.
Well, we need him not to cut into Fant here.
Well, so Fant is going to be, I think like Darren Waller last year, like Darren Waller had what he had like 1200 yards and 3 touchdowns. Really is not going to surprise me if Fant has a 1,000-yard season with like 4 touchdowns this year. Cause I really do. I think that they drafted Albert O to be the red zone guy. I think Drew Locke wants him to be the red zone guy. And I think that the game, I mean, he had 4 targets in the end zone last week, dude. 4.
He did. Yeah. He only played 15 snaps and had 6 targets in total. So he got targeted at, you know, over third of his routes.
Yeah. They know why he's out there. They know what the deal is.
Yeah. And that's part of the thing. Like we talked about, we didn't talk about that New England game. And I seen that game and I just don't know what to do with it. Cause I don't know what to make of either of those teams, to be honest. You know, the 49ers, you know, and it was obvious. I think we talked about it last week where I was just hesitant of not being all the way in on the Rams. And then the 49ers, you know, coming off of that huge loss. Like anytime you see that, and that's why I talk about the Packers a little bit too earlier. Anytime you see like these teams get blown out that you know aren't like a team that should be getting blown out, like you always look for those teams to kind of rebound. And then this Patriots team, like I just don't really know what we have here, you know, with this team. And it's okay to give them a pass. You know, Cam what practiced twice in the last 2 weeks before that game last week. Their receivers are just a joke.
They're so bad, dude.
It's, I mean, you know, I know that, well, it's like, well, Cam won an MVP, you know, throwing to Ted Ginn and Ted Ginn scoring. It's like, but these guys are awful, man. I mean, these guys are
I mean, Damir Bird Damir Bird is literally not even as good as Ted Ginn was.
No, not even close. And then, like, N'Keal Harry, like, what are we even doing here? Like, with him, the way he's used is so weird. Maybe that's just he's just not functional. Like, he can't do anything else. And then, you know, Edelman's kind of been a ghost. And that team just has to, like, they're a team, like you talked about with the Bucks almost. They're, like, inverse. Like, anytime, like, the Patriots are, like, down, I'm like, well, they're done. They're done.
Unless it's against Seattle somehow.
Yeah. I mean, well, Cam was so good throwing the ball that week. I just don't know if they could do, like, how often can they channel that? Anytime I see the Patriots, though, like, fall behind, I'm like, oh, good luck. Like, they're just a team I feel like just consistently has to play ahead. And it's such a fine line with them. But, you know, there's room for them to grow. I don't want to, like, over-panic either because I said Cam did only practice twice. Maybe they come back. I'm excited to see from a cognizant, like, head coach stance. So, like, you and I, the general novice fan and everyone listening to this, everyone knows, right? It's the narrative. Belichick wants to take away George Kittle or teams.
Yeah, he wants to take. Yeah, he wants to take away the best player.
So we know that Kyle Shanahan knows that. Do you not think that, like, Kyle Shanahan almost sees that like a challenge? The way he's like, well, I can get Kittle open. Like, do you think it, or do you think he's like, well, I know he's going to do that. I'm going to.
No, I actually think that Shanahan goes like ninth level and is like, dude, I'm having Kittle run nine routes. Like, I'm having Kittle. What you do is you run like 14-yard like crossers with him all day, because then that means that Debo and Ayuk should be there, you know, 7 yards beneath him, literally should be running wide open, because you have Kittle drag his linebacker and you have Kittle drag a safety, and then the Debo and Ayuk stuff should be open all day long. Theoretically,
I love stuff like that, though. I love the galaxy brain element to this. As we talked about last week, just like McVay and Shanahan too. It's like these guys kind of get up for stuff like this, the other coaching staff. So I always wonder, like, internally, like, because I know if it was you and me or something like it was flipped like that, I'd be like, your brain says, well, I'll just do what he doesn't want me to do. Like, if he wants to take away Kittle, fine. I'm a scheme, all this other stuff. But then also, I think too, like, there'd just be like some like too much pride and be like, I can do this.
Yeah, like I can get Kittle 100 yards and a touchdown against Bill Belichick.
Like, if I beat Bill Belichick while using my number one option, like, that's just another feather. Like,
exactly.
I always think about stuff like that. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting game on another level. I don't think I could touch it just because I just don't know what we have with the Patriots. And then this 49ers team is still so beat up. And then the Kittle element. But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. At least this week they gave us – We have four 4 o'clock games, or three tentatively. So, or we only have four. So last week was just an absolute disaster. I don't know how that this keeps happening. I know it has to do with media and the ratings. I'm sure that Packers game had like a ridiculous amount of ratings, at least until it got, you know, out of hand. But the NFL's got to stop, you know, giving us just the slates like last week and giving us options at 4 o'clock.
I mean, just give us like 6 and 6, dude. It'd be so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, it's just frustrating. Because last week, I mean, it was the first afternoon where I, because, you know, once you saw what happened in that Packers game, you're like, this is a wrap. I mean, then the Jets game was over two drives in. I started grilling out, man. I was like, I don't need to even see the rest of this stuff.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. I've been, just for my own mental health. I don't watch all of the afternoon games, especially if it's like the Green Bay Tampa Bay game. Like, I was like, what's the point? I don't need to watch all this. Like,
I mean, Ron John is cooking. Rojo. I like to call him Ron John. No one likes it, but I like to keep it going.
The haters are sick, dude. They're sick to their stomachs. They can't believe it. They can't believe that Ronald Jones is a top 12 running back in fantasy.
So, objective take, Leonard Fournette plays this week. What's the split?
First, my fan take for Ronald Jones is that Leonard Fournette was healthy last week and it saved a little bit of face and punted the decision for the coaching staff to not play him that much a week down the road for the trainers to be like, you know, his ankle's still not 100%. So that was easier for Bruce Arians and the coaching staff to be like, okay, we're going to sit you out another week. You know, we feel good about our game plan this week and everything. now theoretically Fournette should be healthy, right? So that's a much more difficult conversation to have, because Fournette doesn't think that, like, this is such a big point. Fournette does not think he is bad. Leonard Fournette believes that Leonard Fournette believes he is the best running back in that backfield for sure. Like, he for sure believes that. So they got to give him some touches. My guess is it's like just between those two guys, it's like an 80-20, but they give Fournette at least one goal line carry to kind of placate him, to give him a chance to score a touchdown. That is what I think will happen this week, because Ronald Jones just had 100 yards and two touchdowns. I don't know if he played when's the last third down Ronald Jones played? I don't remember. Probably like last year.
Darrell Henderson. Darrell Henderson has 75 touches this year, and 69 of them are on first and second down.
Yeah, like they're just like, Ronald Jones, dude, you are not playing on third downs. We do not trust you. It's not happening. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if Fournette does have a role, it's taking over for McCoy and for Vaughn on third downs entirely, because I know coaches do stuff like that all the time, and Bruce Arians really does stuff like that all the time, where he'll just bench a guy who's playing well just because he feels like it. But, I mean, Rojo's been, the last two games, he's been so good. I mean, that Thursday night game, he had some runs where it was like, oh, this dude is amazing. Like, when he broke the Roquan Smith mm-hmm. arm tackle with the spin move and got the first down, like, that was a sick run. Like, that was just a good run.
Yeah, but he's a fun guy. Like you said, we kind of I comped him to the Josh Allen of running backs. Just, you know,
I buy that.
Just because, you know, he does things that are super bad and gets him benched, and you're just like, our head scratching at times. But you see the raw talent; like, it's definitely there. And yeah, you see three straight 100-yard rushing games. So I was just curious, like, yeah, if you thought like they're just gonna ride this out, or if you know, we're all in, because he's, you know, kind of a guy. When you look at the running back landscape, I mean,
it's like, I mean,
I'm plugging him in, man, as a top running back.
Oh, I mean, I don't have enough running backs in any league where I have Ronald Jones to bench him. Like,
well, no, I don't think he's a bench. I was just curious, like, what you thought the split was. If it was going to be, is he RB1 the rest of the way?
Oh, I do think he'll be a running back one the rest of the way, because I think that this offense is so clearly based on running the ball in a way that the 2019 offense wasn't. And the big thing for Ronald Jones is, they don't pass in the red zone. Like on the two, like, they could be trying to get Brady numbers on the 2-yard line or whatever, you know, like dumping the ball to Gronk or whatever inside the red zone, but they're down there on the 3 and they're just like, all right, Ronald, like, score. Like, which is not something that, I mean, you know, me and Crane, we love Ronald Jones. And I think that our expectations for this year were like, you know, 1,100 scrimmage yards and 5 touchdowns. And like, he's going to get that by week 10, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's not far off what he had last year. It's just everyone, you know, got off. I mean, I was indifferent. I definitely was not on Leonard Fournette at any level. That was the big thing. I wasn't really on Ronald Jones, especially when the price went up for that period. But I was not also on the other side, where I was buying the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are all the takes. I mean, where are you going to rank Richard Rodgers in your rankings next week at tight end? Is he a top 12 tight end next week?
Yeah, he might be. I had him this week. I had him a little hard. I'm trying to think of where I had him. I had him like 17 or 18. It was like one of those where I was like, yeah, you could stream him.
But I picked him up. I picked him up in the Scott Fish Bowl, and I started Tyler Higbee over him, and we don't have the results of that yet. But I'm imagining that that's going to be chaotic. Like, that was a bad decision. I should have just taken Richard Rodgers. Like, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think Higbee practiced yesterday either. I don't know if that matters.
Tough, you
know,
scenes.
I don't care about Friday. But, yeah, I mean, played him last night in DFS. You know, we ran him a couple times. We entertained picking him up and made it on our main event team, and just we got outbid. But I think he starts again next week. From all indications, it does not sound like Goddard will even be back next week.
He's not back until week 10.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I had a bunch of questions yesterday. Like, well, is Goddard playing? I was like, no. I was like, they haven't made official. He's out. But, yeah. So it looks like he won't play next week either. So you get another week of Rich Rod. Dick Rod, or it's what people on Twitter, have gone to him as.
You love to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, man, this tight end has been a disaster again. I know everyone thought a lot of these guys were going to break out.
Been worse than anyone imagined.
It is rough. I mean, this was the first year, I actually swung back and thought, throughout the analysis and way drafts were playing out, that it was actually an objective good year to go Kittle or Kelce in round two. Because, the front of the running backs got pushed up so highly. You didn't have to, that tier of running backs when they were gone was so bad. Making the jump, post Aaron Jones to the next tier was it was a leap at that price point. And then the receivers were just kind of the same way. It was once the top three guys are off the board, you're just So I thought it was a good year for Kittle or Kelce. Kittle has missed time. He's had the huge two monster games, and then you've gotten really nothing the other weeks. But Kelce is just smashing every week.
Every week.
And then Darren Waller's been solid. But the rest of these guys, Johnny, who I think has been a good hit outside. You left the game last week, and we can transitive property. Maybe Firkser's points to him, but he's been good. And then outside of Johnny, it's been pretty much awful.
Yeah, tight end. So tight end 6 through 12 in PPR. These are all guys in between 56 and 66 PPR points. So literally less than 10 points a game. Jimmy Graham, Robert Tonyan, who got all his points in one game. Tyler Higbee, who got all his points in one game. Hayden Hurst, who I think has not had one game with over 12 PPR points, so he's just an accumulator. Dalton Schultz, Mike Gesicki, TJ Hawkinson, and then Noah Fant, who has missed 2 weeks, is tight end 13. Well,
3 weeks in totality. He hasn't played football in 3 weeks and is still tight end 13.
Tight end 13.
Because he missed the game. He just missed two, right?
But he got hurt. He got hurt really early in one of the games, right?
He got hurt in the second half, but then they had a bye and he missed the game. And he's still there at that spot. It's just been a disaster. And even the guys, you think it's you say in totality too, Gesicki's been awful outside of two games, just horrendous. Yep. He's got 200 yard games and the rest of his yards combined is a joke. And then now we have this Tua factor, if Tua is even good for him or any of these guys, because the Fitzmagic war rig is a real thing. If you go to any single destination Fitzpatrick has played, he's elevated dudes for fantasy.
100%. Yeah.
And so you have to worry about these Dolphins guys, what you even have in Gesicki. And Gesicki was already running hot and cold anyways. It's just tight end was, it's another disaster. Zach Ertz Mark Andrews even. Dude, Mark Andrews has had those.
Mark Andrews games. He's going to get there though, because
The Ravens. It's not like he hasn't been frustrating though.
Yeah. But the Ravens have this bye week. And I think my take on the Ravens struggles is they have to stop. Yeah. But you have to. 15,
they're up 17 every game.
Or down 20 in the Chiefs game.
That was the one game that and then Lamar was so bad, so we don't even know.
And they're playing every other game super slow too. That's the thing, is they're playing crazy slow. Even in the time frames of when the games are competitive, they're playing crazy slow. And then also, I think that this Mark Ingram high ankle sprain is going to be the mana from heaven for that offense, because you replace him with J.K. Dobbins and
they're not going to watch.
Oh, dude, it's going to be Gus Edwards, isn't it?
You're going to get so – oh, dude. How do you – I'm just going to get you off this already. They're going to play so much Gus Edwards, aren't they?
I'm already – because I have Dobbins in Scott Fishbowl. He was actually the first running back I drafted. And I didn't start him week one when he had the two touchdowns, because I have Boston Scott also. And Scott had that start against the Washington football team. So I think I've gotten 8 J.K. Dobbins points. I've been starting him every week, and he just gets one carry and three targets.
He's been a tough guy to cut, and I haven't cut him in any leagues I've had him in.
Oh, because no.
Every time he
– No, he is uncuttable. Yeah, he's uncuttable.
Every time he touches the ball, he looks amazing. And then – or, and someone joked, they're well, he's got some negative runs too. And I was like, yeah, well, he only gets the ball to touch – he only gets to touch the ball 4 times a game, so he's trying to house every one of them. He's like, I got to try to house every run because I'm not going to get the football. But maybe it's a thing. Cause everyone's – I think a lot of people are going to try to talk themselves into the DeAndre Swift angle of, he's going to come out of the bye and they're going
to – I was just getting ready to say – My whole hopes and dreams rest on him being a bigger part of the game plan coming out of the bye, and it's going to be – by the way, how many – if you – don't cheat. How many receptions do you think Gus Edwards has in his 3-year NFL career?
Two.
Okay, it's higher than that. He has okay. He's played in 33 NFL games. He has 12 targets and 9 receptions.
Okay. I would be hard pressed to remember any of them.
to 318 carries, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, dude, Gus Edwards is good. He just missed his NFL mark by about 15 years. Like 15 years ago, this dude would have been an RB1 in fantasy.
Do you remember Bo Scarborough?
Oh yeah.
So Bo Scarborough is like the all-time, like, I wish we could take that dude back to like 1986 because he would have just owned the NFL. He would have been the best. He's so big and so strong and would have just crushed it, but he just is not agile enough to catch the passes. I need Dobbins to be a thing though, so I'm not appreciating this negativity.
I need him to be a thing too. It's been a slow pace. I'm so jaded by what we've gotten so far that I need your optimism to keep me alive right now. I need it.
I mean, we got to get one of these guys, whether it's Akers, whether it's Swift, whether it's Jonathan Taylor, whether it's Dobbins. We got to get one of these guys to go full Miles Sanders from last year, where they came back from the bye, which is what happened with Sanders last. Well, simultaneously last year, the Eagles came back from their bye and Jordan Howard started having neck problems. And Miles Sanders went rocket ship. And, like, it's got to happen for one of these guys. Like, just, like, probability. Yeah. That's not true at all.
It hasn't been strong so far. Even the guys that have been playing well, like, you know, Edwards-Helaire, and you're getting Jonathan Taylor points. But they're not good points.
They're brutal points.
There's a lot of meat left on the bone. You know, obviously, Clyde Edwards-Helaire so far, when you look at, like, his touch count compared to where he is placed in the running back totem pole in terms of fantasy points scored, there's a huge discrepancy still. And Jonathan Taylor is just getting no explosive plays. And we thought that was what he was.
That was what he would do. Right.
He would get, you know, us a lot of explosive plays. And then, you know, Cam Akers, Swift until last week, Dobbins, AJ Dillon doesn't even play. Zach Moss was hurt and doesn't really play. I mean, James Robinson was the hit and wasn't even drafted. I think, by the way,
that Zach Moss thing is going to swing the other way where he should be fully, fully healthy now. And I think we're going to see him in Singletary in a 50-50 split. I think because that's what it was. The first 2 weeks, they were straight up 50-50. And I think that we'll be back to that starting this week. That's my Zach Moss take.
Well, 2 weeks ago, they basically played TJ Yeldon like that. Even while that game was not even out of control, like, you know, Singletary had dominated the backfield 2 weeks in a row against the Rams and Raiders. And then we thought it was the same thing. All right, Moss is out again. It's going to be Singletary getting 90% of the running back touches again. We're good to go. And then they just used him back like he was the first 2 weeks of the season with TJ Yeldon in that game. So it was, yeah. Singletary is one of these guys that's just like he feels almost like Ronald Jones, just where they just don't want to give him the opportunity. When he does get opportunities, he's been pretty good though. That they just don't want to go all in.
Yeah. What are your last thing? What are your expectations for Le'Veon Bell and CEH?
Same as always. I haven't changed. I think he's like a step above Darrell Williams. I think they brought him in to play Darrell Williams' role. I mean, if you look at Edwards-Helaire, his touches are first and second down touches. Like we talked about, he's not playing as. So Darrell Williams wasn't playing as much as like Malcolm Brown, but he was like Chiefs Malcolm Brown. And that's kind of what I think Le'Veon Bell will be. I think what you're still worried about with Clyde Edwards-Helaire is just that how much pass work does he ultimately get in context of the position, and does he get true scoring opportunities? That's all we're really worried about. I don't think that Le'Veon himself is going to be a guy I think that offers a lot of standalone value. Now, I do think he has an out for standalone value that didn't exist. You know, obviously, if there's a Clyde Edwards-Helaire injury or he just ends up being objectively
being better
than we think he could be, there's an out that didn't exist. But I do believe the probability is he's essentially, you know, Malcolm Brown, Darrell Williams on the Chiefs roster. But I mean, for Edwards-Helaire, I think I always thought it was just going to be a thing where, like, you weren't going to get your picks overall six investment, but it's still like you'll probably get like an RB2 plus and then run in some hot weeks like last week where you can get enough yards with the way teams are structurally playing the Chiefs. You can run into those games where he could be hyper efficient rushing the football. But you see in the touchdown was called back, like all his red zone touches since week one have not been traditional running back like touches. Even last week it was the speed option. They are not just lining him up in the red zone and giving him like power runs anymore. It has not happened since week one. And I do think that they still will kind of look at that situation with Le'Veon Bell and see him as they thought of maybe what they had with Damian Williams, because they are very similar builds, 230-pound guys, and then maybe that's like part of the vision that they had. But that's kind of – I don't think 1 week really changes what I thought about Edwards-Helaire. I thought he was a good running back, and I didn't think he was a bad running back before they signed Le'Veon Bell. I think just from a fantasy stance, that's your concern, is can he get enough receiving?
I don't think he's a very good running back. I think he's –
I think he's fine. No, I don't think
he's bad. Yeah, he's fine.
Like, I don't think he's, like, a detriment, I should say.
I think Myles Gaskin is better than him. But, like, I think he's better – like, I think he's better than, like, Darrell Williams. Like, I judge running backs
based on, like, if you're just, like – if you're just so bad at the position, like, you just shouldn't be getting touches, and that's how I treat you. Other than that, like
– yeah. He's better than that. So he is – he's better than, like, shouldn't be on the field, but he's not he sure shit is not Brian Westbrook, which is what everyone wanted to sell us, right?
Because we're getting that with Washington. Like, J.D. McKissick, like, that dude should not touch football at any play.
Yes. Yeah. None of his touches is much better than him.
None of his touches turn into anything positive. Like, he's getting there, like, getting us, like, PPR flex points, but, like, his touches are trash. Like, it's like every Nyheim Hines touch is a gift to the defense. Like, it's like, cool. Like, you're using him in this role, but, like, this dude sucks.
I mean, like, as someone who is just absolutely face deep in Nyheim Hines and best ball, I need you to take that back.
I mean, sure, you want me to take it. Like, he's like Theo Riddick, dude. It's like when Theo Riddick was getting on touches.
Yeah, he is. He's Theo Riddick. Yeah.
That's what McKissick is doing. He's Theo Riddicking the situation here. Not that I think that, you know, I don't want to stand for Antonio Gibson, but it's just like every McKissick touch is like, what are we even getting here? Like, what is the goal? Like, how is this making offense better? And Frank Reich, I know, genuinely believes that somehow these Nyheim Hines touches are good, but
he loves Nyheim Hines. It's so bizarre.
I mean,
it's weird.
J.D. McKissick's averaging 5.4 yards per target and 7 yards per catch. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing here?
Tough scenes.
I don't know. Coaches do this stuff. It's weird. And they archetype guys. And if they're attached to – these guys are attached to rookie running backs. And we've seen it in all these situations with these rookie running backs. No one's getting the keys. And typically we have in years past. So I think that the side of fade rookie all rookies was wrong, and I always thought it was wrong anyways. But we are actually seeing the impact play out of these guys are getting compartmentalized in a sense in their offense.
It's so weird though, because you normally think fade rookie wide receivers, but like every rookie wide receiver is smashing his face off, and then the only rookie running back you're happy with at their ADP. Well, I guess Gibson round 12, right? If you got him before AP got cut, you're happy. James Robinson, obviously, you're happy. You know what? I would actually even say Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round. Like, it didn't win you your league, but, like, he's fine, right? Like, you're not losing because you took Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round. Like, he's not winning.
He isn't giving you any ceiling weeks, the win you weeks either. Where we always talk about, like, you want the spike.
But he's been better than, like, Mixon and Jacobs.
Oh, yeah. And he's, you know, Miles Sanders in that same run. Like, you're getting all the – and then, you know, the guys ahead of him all, except for Kamara, ran into some pretty poor luck, except for, you know, Zeke and Kamara stayed healthy. So, but then you think about that, yeah, that next year after, he's been better than all those guys on a weekly basis and had a higher floor. Not winning you weeks, but, yeah, he hasn't killed you at all. James Robinson's the one guy that's, like, gotten, like, the keys to the full offense. But I always thought the rookie wide receiver thing was interesting, you know, because there's just coming into this draft class, there was just so many opportunities as the way the NFL had transitioned to playing more three wide receiver sets in the past 3 years. It was, you know, over 70% NFL had run offense plays with the passing plays with over three wide receivers on the field, generational change. And you went down every depth chart in the NFL and there was no team that you could look at that said, like, this team doesn't need a receiver. Like the way that
literally, yeah,
you might have one or two, like you might be top heavy, yeah, because you've seen it play out Dallas. But like, you need like 4 and 5 wide receivers in today's NFL in terms of depth, like usable players. And because like, there you come in the season, you're like, well, the Bengals are one of the deepest wide receiver rosters, but like, you never thought like they had like an alpha. But it's like, in terms of depth, you're like, well, all these dudes are usable. Because a lot of teams, you would be like, well, all right, we have Calvin Ridley, we have Julio Jones. No one's got a better 1-2 than that. Well, then we've got Russell Gage, Olamide Zaccheaus, and Laquon Treadwell coming in this year. It's like, oh, well, you're going to need more than that, too.
Laquon Treadwell?
You know, but that's why I thought this rookie class had at least an inkling to make their way in, because there's just so much opportunity on the board in today's NFL, and then paired with depth charts being so bludgeoned in terms of wide receiver depth. This season, we've seen some of these guys come and hit the ground running. I mean, CD looks amazing. Justin Jefferson, this guy, woo, baby.
Man.
I mean, where do you – like, Justin Jefferson, we talked about him versus Lamb a couple weeks ago. But like, Justin Jefferson has to be, like rest of the season. Like, where do you have that dude? Like, he's had three, like, ridiculous games that was past four.
I think he's probably, like, a top 24-ish wide receiver.
Man, I
something
think
like that.
That.
So I think the issue is that the team still feels a lot of loyalty towards Adam Thielen. Like they are not like in the coaching meetings, like it's not like Zimmer is not talking with his dudes like, yeah, we got to phase Adam Thielen out and just feed this Justin Jefferson kid. Like I think that it would not surprise me to see Thielen out target Justin Jefferson the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that that's fair. I think this team is starting to, like, we realize, like, they're going to have to throw more.
Yes.
And, you know, we're starting to see that. That's why I have a little more faith. Because my concern would just be like, well, it's still going to be hard for them to support two options in this offense.
Yeah.
But we're starting to see, like, they are bad. They're that bad.
They're really bad. Yeah.
And it has to play out, and they have to throw in these games. So, I mean, I'm confident in him. I mean, we had a conversation between, like, him and Mike Evans the rest of the season. I think I'm pretty – I take
Justin Jefferson. Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. He's, I mean,
what about
good,
what
good
about
these guys?
Chase Claypool or Mike Evans the rest of the season?
Oh man, God, I don't think I would edge Evans. So the thing with Claypool for me is that he's had more than four targets in one game, and he doesn't even have an end zone target on the year.
Yeah, we haven't seen him play with Deontay yet either, really.
And I just and I brought up the Ben stuff when we talked about the Steelers. I think there's a perception that this is like somehow a high flying offense. I feel like that people think that, and I do worry that that these four, because James Washington's playing a ton.
Yes.
And like that all four of these guys, like there's just going to be quite a lot of oscillation, like who does something one week and who does something the next, and what game plan dictates this guy gets targets and how he's used, because Ben's just keeping stuff near line of scrimmage, taking one or two deep shots a game. I think Claypool's definitely run a little pure to start the season, which is good, because if you run pure as a rookie, it means you're going to get more opportunities. There's incentive to get you more opportunities. So I believe the Steelers want to get him opportunities. But like I said, when you look under the crux of it, it's like he had one game, 1-4 targets, doesn't have an end zone target this year. Perception of him, I saw like this week he's ranked as a top 24 receiver. My projections don't have anywhere close to that because they're not going to. Like, he's going to be a guy that's always going to be like that. Like, my projections are never going to spin out based on – unless he gets, like, a string of usage that says, like, yeah, I have to project him for this amount of target share. But on his target share, like, it's never going to spin out like Claypool. But the perception of Claypool right now, I think he's a great chip to package up right now. And it hurts me because I think he's a good player, and, like, I would want to own Chase Claypool. I just think the perception is a lot higher than his actual opportunity. And then especially with, you know, Deontay coming back and the ghost of Juju, I don't know what's – I think we're dead here.
Yeah.
Like Juju's dynasty stock is, oh man, dude.
What would you trade for him?
Yeah. I mean, I still think he's precocious enough. It's not like Hakeem Nicks where like we knew there's a reason Hakeem Nicks fell off, right? Like
he had compartment syndrome. He was the original compartment syndrome guy.
Really, with Juju right now is we have the two factors. It's like, one, he's never proven like he can, you know, just be the alpha. And two, like the way he's being used this season is hot garbage. Like the way
you tweeted it the other day. He's Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. He's his career low, a depth of target. I mean, the usage and the top. So if you're going to be used like that, if you're going to be getting the targets Juju's getting and used like that, you have to get like 140 targets.
Yes.
You have to.
Yeah.
He's not going to get there. There's just no chance. So if the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have any incentive to use Juju Smith-Schuster outside of the capacity they are now, he has to just run into like an excess amount of targets to cover the ground, and it's just not going to happen. So I actually have him this week. I have him like, I don't know where you have him. I have him wide receiver 40 something, 46 or 45. Like it hurts, man. It hurts. But I'm definitely. I think Claypool, the perception of Claypool is way ahead of the reality of Claypool.
Story. Okay, here. This is how we'll end. Scott Fishbowl, I have all these dusty tight ends. I have Logan Thomas. I have Tyler, the aforementioned Tyler Higbee. And I have one other dusty tight end. Let's go and look up who it is. And I also have Juju Smith-Schuster. Would you start in tight end premium Juju, Logan Thomas, or Tyler Higbee?
Oh, God. I mean, they're all similar target counts, right?
Yeah, and I have a giant head start. I got 17 from Fulgham and 20 from Boston Scott.
So I still think I would start Juju because he's a Steelers.
Because I'm gonna hate myself if Juju Smith gets 26 points on any of my bench, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Well, it's gonna be hard for him to be below where he was last week. So you will get more points than you got last week.
Yeah, well,
he'll beat we'll 6 yards. I think he'll beat 6 yards.
Well, it's a bold prediction, but all right. Tell it. Well, that's a very good place to end the show. Tell the people about what we have going on at sharpfootballanalysis.com.
It hurts, man. Sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can go over there. We got promo code SHARP25. You get 25% off anything you want there. You don't have to look at my stuff. You can get Warren's betting package. You can get TA's betting stuff. Those guys have been crushing all year. We're in week 7. We have a free week coming up. I'll promote that when we get there. But yeah, just Sharp Football Analysis. Find me Pre-Snap Motion with Chad Scott on the podcast Sharp Angles, where it's like betting real football with Cleve TA and Dan Pizzuta. Dan Pursuit is awesome. Definitely give him a follow as well. And then I'm here at Davis picking games. I don't want to share our record because I don't want to kibosh us, but I've been tracking me and Davis's record this year.
It's been good, bro. It's been a good year. It's been a good year. Yeah, everyone, thank you very much for listening. Make sure to check out dailyroto.com for all the DFS stuff you need. And then all of my fantasy football ranks and everything is up free on sportsgrid.com. Rich and I will be back next week. Good luck this weekend, everybody.